Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
Coming to you from both sides of Gitmo Nation, this is No Agenda for Sunday, February 22nd, 2009.
This is No Agenda.
From Gitmo Nation East in southwest London, safe and secure in the Crackpot Command Center, I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak.
Oh, give me a little more than that.
Well, that's it.
But don't you have a location?
I am in northern Silicon Valley in the Gitmo Nation.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
You're supposed to fill it up, man.
You got to give me a rehearsal on this crazy thing. I still sounds like, I don't know, where is this? Is this the cue? I don't know. Let me just throw something in.
Yeah, after I say I'm Adam Curry, then you're supposed to say from Northern
California.
Yeah, no,
I got that part. I mean, I hit it, but I didn't hit, you know, whatever. Okay. Well, I get it right. You want to do it again?
No. I'm good. We'll do better next week. It'll be a surprise, and we'll have to change it a little bit every single time. So you are in the absolute northwestern corner of Gitmo Nation today.
Yeah, this is northern Gitmo Nation, Silicon Valley. This is actually Silicon Valley Northeast, Microsoft country.
Oh, that's true. It is Microsoft country. Yeah, up in the Dvorak compound.
Exactly.
Well, John.
So what's been happening with you? Right, we're just up here freezing to death and... Yeah. Not much going on.
We had beautiful, absolutely stunning weather yesterday here and on the continent, and my aircraft is due for its annual in March, so I decided to fly it over to Antwerp. And it was great. I hadn't flown in 4 months, so it was really it was fun.
What's in Antwerp?
Oh, Antwerp is where my my flight instructor and mechanic has his hangar.
Oh, did you leave the plane behind?
Yeah, well, so what you do is I fly over... And then pick up either my instructor/mechanic, and he'll fly back. Or if he's busy, then he'll have some other pilot, and then he'll fly back with me. And then I'll be back in the UK. Then he takes the plane back.
And you did that?
Yeah. So I flew back and forth. It was beautiful. 5,500 feet all the way. It was just fantastic. It was really, really nice. I don't pre-announce anymore when I'm going flying for some obvious reasons.
Well, you're a paranoid freak. So,
and I love you too, honey.
But you still have to file flight plans. It wouldn't take that much to figure out what's going on if somebody wanted to.
Well, if you want to zap me out of the sky, but you know, it gives a little less preparation time for some actual sabotage.
So if you're flying at 5,500 feet, which is a really low, relatively low altitude, does your plane have it has plastic windows, I'm sure, but are they clear enough to take photos out of? Is it a good plane to take pictures from?
It's actually an excellent plane to take pictures out of because it's a high wing. So all the windows all around, you have complete clear view down to the ground. It's a fantastic plane for that. Yeah.
Is it? But is it all cloudy, old, you know, kind of
scratched
oxidized
up
window with some graffiti scratched in it? Is that what it's like?
No, in fact, it's not. No, it's a nice aircraft, John, and it has great windows. And it's we can even, if you want, I can even take a door off, and you can just sit there and take pictures, and we can fly around. Because again, it's a high wing, you can tilt it, so you can have a continuous tilt angle. Oh, it's perfect for that stuff.
Oh, okay.
But if you really want to take good pictures, a guy I know at the airport has, I think, a Seneca, twin Seneca with a hole in the back and a whole mount system. So you can just literally, you know, either kneel or sit or crouch or lay down if you want and stick your lens out through the hole in the bottom. Which is, it's the best way to, they do it professionally, aerial photography. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, I'd love to do that.
Yeah, there's another guy there who does imaging. They do super high resolution imaging of high voltage wires. But I'm talking super resolution.
And
they get every single point. You know, there's all these data points, and essentially you see a wireframe of what's on the ground of these high tension wires. But it's all geo mapping. It's pretty cool stuff.
Hmm.
Got good toys out there. Good toys.
Yeah, I'd like to do that because I've taken a lot of aerial shots now and again, but And not really set up, you know, not in a plane that's actually set up for it.
Well, so. Oh man, that headset, it's...
I'm trying to adjust it.
I mean, would it be hard to get a duplicate setup in Seattle? I mean, you're going to wind up living there eventually full time anyway. You might as well set up the studio properly.
Yeah, no, I'm going to do that.
Okay, good.
The problem is today with one of the problems today is that this machine had a couple of those Seagate drives.
Yeah.
That blew up, and so the machine had to be rebuilt. And one of the sound port is shot. For some reason, and needs new drivers or something. Mm-hmm. So I'm still, so the machine's not really ready for to be thrown up. So I can't.
Yeah. Well, you sound significantly shittier than normal.
Yeah. Well, I'm running through a $400 mic and a compressor and a real gear. This is going through a $25 thing.
Noticeably so.
Yeah.
So a couple of big stories that we didn't talk about on Thursday, which are. Yeah, you know, because we did focus a lot on U.S. politics and Obama, and we've neglected some other parts of the world, although this does tie into the States as well. A big story that is there's now action being undertaken online, which I consider to be completely senseless. This blackout for New Zealand. Have you been following that?
Yeah, apparently the New Zealanders they're going to put some law in place that's a censorship thing of some sort. And so to protest this, the meaningless use of black icons on Twitter, among other, and apparently you're supposed to do it everywhere, mm-hmm. Has been encouraged. This reminds me, if you remember some years ago when they used to have the black websites.
Oh, this has happened many times in the past 20, 25 years.
Yeah. It accomplishes nothing.
No. Yeah, it makes it hard to read.
Right, with the black websites. But these little black icons, somebody said, you're going to put a black icon up? And I answered back, no, I'll write a column. You think that's maybe
exactly.
A better idea? Than,
exactly.
Than a,
oh, thank you. Thank you. This is a part of this new activism. You know, it's like we feel so satisfied if we've done something. Hey, man, at least I did something. You know, I made my icon black. That'll really change the world.
It's the online equivalent of an armband.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. A black armband. We used to have those a lot, too, back in the 70s. That was a kind of a regular occurrence.
Right. That morphed into yellow ribbons. And around the old, starting with the old oak tree. So you'd have these ribbons around trees.
Right, right.
And then the little dinky mini ribbon showed up on the as a pin, a lapel pin.
Right. Yeah.
And then that morphed into. And
then of course
AIDS.
We got the AIDS ribbon. Yep. Yeah. 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 Yeah
that
yeah.
Morphed into the AIDS ribbon, and then that morphed into the cheap rubber band bracelets.
The bracelets, right? Which of course contain RFID tracking units.
were they that expensive? And then that started with the yellow one. Of course, yellow seems to be an operative. Maybe we should have yellow icons instead of black. Yeah, that would have made more sense in the fractal.
But let's just take a tally here. Have we stopped AIDS? Have we stopped war? Have we stopped
homelessness?
Homelessness. That's another good one. No, of course not. I agree, John. Please write a great column.
Yeah, writing and bitching and making a public scene is more interesting than passive activity like black icons. I mean, it's nice to, I guess it shows solidarity. So what? Anyway, so what's in the news?
What's in the news? Oh, man, there's so much in the news. Well, actually, I was just going to tack on to that and say that it's kind of amazing because with every day I see how the internet is actually functioning in fantastic ways. And how the established elite totally underestimate the power of the internet, and you can see this happening now with Obama. You know, he's even a part of it with this whole calling out thing of mayors and governors. I'm going to call you out. Is the internet is basically one big calling out machine. So when you use the internet and you promise a whole bunch of things, particularly when you promise internet-related stuff, like I'll be Twittering, which, of course, stopped. I think the last time he tweeted, Obama Twittered was after he got elected.
Is that right? Yeah. I mean, even his people aren't Twittering for him? Because he was never really Twittering.
What is he?
What is it?
Well, is he the real Obama? Hold on.
<No.
laughs> It's just Barack Obama, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Well, I follow him, and I haven't seen anything, so let me just see what pops up here in my tweet deck. Here, at Barack Obama. Let's see what the last post was. No, the last post was January 19th. There you go.
I'm looking at it now.
Asking you to honor Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So
that's a while ago.
Now, if you do Joe Biden, it's even funnier. Joe Biden literally hasn't Twittered in a year, or his people
haven't. Well, Joe Biden doesn't even know what Twitter is.
Well, I'll tell you, I pulled a soundbite. Robert Gibbs, who is the press secretary, started off, and I watch these religiously because it's just great entertainment, people. Please go to C-SPAN, cspan.org. It's the entertainment is there ready for you. And listen to how we started off the Friday morning press briefing is what it's called, press briefing.
It has been amusing this week to read the many press releases and Twitter comments on those that found the stimulus on C-SPAN during the vote.
Interesting, huh? So they're listening.
Yeah, they're monitoring Twitter, obviously, for some reason.
Well, hopefully for the same reason I'm monitoring Twitter. This is how you find out what people are interested in.
Well, at least a sub-segment. I mean, let's be real here. I mean, the average Twitter user is not the average American.
Yeah, and
we're actually up here in Port Angeles. We have this is where the average American is. It's one of the great test markets. One of the good reasons to be here. It's one of the great test markets of the United States. In fact, the Pacific Northwest is generally used as a test market. Seattle is notoriously used by Hollywood as a test market for films. The if films are successful in Seattle, they should be in testing. They should be successful throughout the country. But this area here. Although I've run into areas that are also the same within the Midwest, I've seen these towns. You can spot them a mile away because they test weird stuff. You'll find like here they had a McDonald's that had for a while they had a self-service counter for adding stuff to the hamburger. So you could buy like a 99-cent cheeseburger and you could load it up with tomatoes and lettuce and you could make it into whatever you wanted. Yeah, that kind of thing. Of course, that got swapped out for something other test. And so it's an interesting place, and I can assure you that the number of Twitter users up here is about 8.
But they all follow you.
I'm sure they do. Cause, I mean, a couple of them I know they do because they're always talking about, I went into the deli today. They keep tabs on that.
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point, and this was accentuated even more. We've been emailing back and forth over the past couple of days about the New York Post cartoon racism controversy, and I think I even said, "Oh wow, man, I don't know if we want to talk about this because it's such a loaded topic." But it all of a sudden it dawned on me that, and it's really sad to have to realize this, that the people do not understand who makes up the law and who makes things happen. Because when you look at a cartoon and you associate the chimpanzee being shot with Obama and consider that racist, that means that deep inside of you, you really believe that Obama wrote the stimulus package, which, of course, he did not. This is what your government does, what Congress and the Senate does. And they are, of course, the chimps who should have been shot dead. And just to see the protest and people in their own mind justly outraged because they really make that association proves that people have, because when I saw it, I'm like, yeah, that's kind of funny. Yeah, of course. And I'm the way I, when I see the dead chimpanzee. I'm thinking, yeah, like some shitty ass lawyer who's been writing this thing for 3 months while they were preparing for it, you know, and all these other dipshits copying stuff. I mean, I just have a whole different vision. I don't see Obama writing the stimulus package at all.
Well, there's a couple of interesting things about this monkey cartoon. One, of course, it was a callback to the killing of a chimp by the police. That was apparently the chimp was attacking somebody.
Yeah.
It was a pet chimp, and so they shot it dead. And so that was the callback. Although to make the callback work as a cartoon, I looked at this cartoon a couple of times, and I was thinking, you know, if they didn't want to do anything about, if it was just standalone without the callback to the dead chimp, they would have just had a Bozo the Clown with two bullets in him,
right,
which had been the same gag basically.
Right.
But to make this gag work better, or to have made it work better, the chimp should have had a diaper on him, because the chimp that was shot dead had a diaper. So the cartoonist made a blunder there. It kind of ruined the callback. Now, the other thing is, in fact, Eric pointed this out. He says this is ridiculous, distraction. There's all this, you know, controversy going on about the stimulus package and some other stuff, and now it's about the cartoon. It's like the Danish Muslim cartoons.
Yes.
And everybody's all up in arms about it, and now it's just another, you know, example of somebody coming along. Obviously, he's been listening to our show long enough to start coming up with our kind of thinking.
He's come over to the dark side.
Which is that this is just a, maybe it was even put in there on purpose.
Well, thank you, because owns the New York Post, right?
Yeah, Murdoch.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, put on purpose, and that definitely takes the heat off of the real political discussion about the stimulus package, the bailout of the bankers, and all these other things, what we should be talking about, rather than talking about an idiotic cartoon. And so Gregory Muhammad, one of our listeners who is always providing me with some cool stuff, he sends me the update from John Legend page, which is an open letter to the New York Post. John Legend, of course, being another musician, you know, has to get involved. You know, I wish musicians would just, you know, they're
wait,
basically
wait, is this the John, which John Legend is this? Who is this?
This is the guy who plays the piano, and he's really, you know, he's like a lounge act that's extremely popular, and he just came in out of, I thought he appeared, you know, about a year or two ago, and he's like huge.
Okay.
Anyway, he goes on and on with this long, I'm not going to read the whole thing, it goes on forever. He just goes, but it's just like scathing. You should print an apology in your acknowledge that the cartoon was ignorant, offensive, and racist. It should not have been printed. I'm aware it could be just your racism and violence.
Yeah.
Violence. And I truly believe we are better than this filth. As we attempt to rise above our difficult past and look toward a better future, we don't need the New York Post to resurrect the images of Jim Crow.
Yeah, but this is offensive, because it had, if anything, the New York Post should apologize for it just not being all that great. You know, it was a stretch. It wasn't well executed. But I don't believe it was meant as a racist cartoon.
Well, it probably wasn't. I mean, why would it be? I mean, you wouldn't run a cartoon like that.
No, that's crazy, of course.
Right.
It's stupid.
But, you know, you're going to start to see this kind of response to just about anything, especially as, you know, what's going to happen, because I don't think Obama's going to, you know, I mean, so far he's, you know, put lobbyists in, he's all these rule things that he was going to do for change and hope. He hasn't done any of it, you know, because he's so preoccupied with this bill. He's got to load up his cabinet, and there's nobody to pick from. He won't bring the professors in like we were expecting. He weren't bringing, you know, the non-Washington insiders. He didn't have, I don't know why. I mean, but, you know, you got Rahm Emanuel, who's like a politician, so they're only going to put their own buddies in. And so we haven't seen anything. He's got lobbyists in. He hasn't done this. He hasn't let these bills sit so the public can, you know, comment on them. So as this goes on, because there's a couple of websites that are keeping track of all this, you know, 450 promises, that as this goes on and people start to get, you know, they start to turn, and a lot of people who are big Obama supporters have already, you know, especially these carping liberals who don't like anything anyway, once they start to turn on him and be critical, it's going to be real interesting to see the reaction to it, because it's going to be like, you know, everything's going to be seen as offensive and racist, and that's the only reason, is because you're a racist.
It's going to be exactly the same as Windows Mac fanboys. That's what it's going to be.
That would be bad.
That would be very bad, but that seems to be the human psyche. And again, it just flabbergasts me that people, if you see this cartoon as racist, then you don't understand how it works. You don't understand what the president does and what Congress does and what the Senate does. Are people not being educated?
Well, hello.
Yeah.
There's that for sure. And everybody, you know, still thinks the president does everything. And, I mean, you know, the economy caved. I mean, the Congress is the purse holder of the purse strings. They're the ones who do the budget.
No. They're supposed to be, but of course, they're not entirely anymore because they don't really control the money.
Well, you're taking it one step further and saying that the Fed is really, but the Fed is, you know, pretty much, you know, if they tell them to print, if Congress tells the Fed to print more money, they're not going to say no.
No. The when the Fed wants to print more money, they don't ask Congress anymore. That's the problem.
Well, maybe we'll get. I'm sure somebody will come in and tell us that that's not necessarily true. I think they have to have some sort of permission. I'm not sure.
Well, then, you know what? Since this is going to happen anyway, John, let's just run down a few more things that are not change. A couple things from this week. Number one,
all right.
Obama administration's from AP is trying to kill the email case. This was the case that is ongoing from the previous administration, trying to recover the millions of missing White House emails. Apparently, the Obama administration is doing its best to block this investigation. And there's an AP story, which I presume to be true. So I'd say that's that kind of goes against the transparency thing.
Yeah, no, the transparency thing, I haven't seen any evidence of that.
Well, I've been looking at recovery.org, waiting for... Okay.
You know, I still have yet to go to that site.
Oh, you should... No, I'm sorry, .gov, not .org.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah.
Well, so here's the thing. You should go to it now, man. So they have a timeline, and this is what I like about it. It tells you... On February 19th, 2009, federal agencies to begin reporting their formula block grant awards. So, okay, so, and they have to report. And there's this whole big, you know, PDF file you can read about the directives handed out by ORZAG, of course, the guy we talked about on the last show. But they don't actually report until May the 3rd, federal agencies to make performance plans publicly available and federal agencies to begin reporting on their allocations for entitlement programs. So we're going to go through almost 3 months of work that will not be posted.
Yeah.
Well, that's lame. If the federal agencies are reporting as of, you know, 3 days ago, how come we don't see that?
You're asking the wrong.
I know. By the way, this, the wrong guy. Yeah.
This recovery.org. I'm looking at it, and this really.
No, .gov. .gov.
I mean, I got it.
Yeah.
.gov. And it's got a, you know, they got, I guess, another movie of Obama, but the still frame.
Yeah, I saw. It's funny, isn't it? Yeah, it's not very flattering.
No, and I guess they probably couldn't figure out how to like change the frame. So, you know, at least maybe he should be smiling or something. He looks like a Big Brother image. This would be a good, actually, I'm going to capture this and then Photoshop it because this is a great picture to use if you want to have a, you know, for Big Brothers watching you.
So,
by the way, I want to mention something because you mentioned ORZAG before we go off.
Good, because I know I have something about ORZAG. Go ahead.
Okay, so you told me about ORZAG and check out his bio. So I went and found his bio.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I guess it's like, you know, what he got, how he got the job. So I'm dying because it's got his basic bona fides, but it has essentially a documentation of every little article and scrap of paper he's ever written. It's like, you know, the thoughts on this is, you know, what is it? The attribution scrap of paper, you know, found in garbage. This is as if I swear to God.
Finished Nancy Drew novel series.
I'm telling you, it's like a diary. It's just like if I had, you know, if I put my bio together and I wrote down everything that I had ever published, which is essentially what he's done over like a long period of time, including just short letters to the editor.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be a book. So I guess what he did was, which is an interesting idea for anybody that wants to get a job in this particular administration. you know, over-document everything you've ever done. So it's this huge tome of, you know, what you did in high school, you know, the fact that you were, the cheerleader, you know, the boosters, you know, you were in the PTA, you know, every little thing. And then you drop this on them as a big thunk. They probably, this is great.
Oh, that's impressive. Oh, yes, we need to hire him.
You're in.
Yeah.
It's just, it's an eye roller.
Well, so I'm reading through some of these documents because Orszag is also responsible for the entire, not just the $75 billion housing thingamajig, but also for the almost $800 billion stimulus package. So I'm reading through some of the documents.
Well, but before you do that, remind people who Orszag is in the past, because I think a new listener may not know what we're talking about.
Okay, well, the only thing I remember, of course, was the funny bit that he...
Right, that's all we need to
that's
know.
That's all we need to know is Orszag.
Orszag is the head of the budget.
Yeah, he's the guy that doles out the money, essentially. He has oversight over all this money, and one of his previous gigs was as a consultant to the Central Bank of Iceland, which is right. The whole country is now bankrupt. So, you know, of all the things to put on that enormously long CV, which I think I have it in the show notes for this week. Maybe it was there last week, but I'm trying to put as much in as possible now, all these links. So I'm searching around and I see his directive, which is very detailed on it's basically the transparency directive on the reporting. And it's very detailed, John. It goes into the spreadsheet, how many characters can be in each cell, what each cell is supposed to contain. I mean, it's a real government document, and you feel good about that. And along with these documents, I find there was a question from Charles Grassley, who is he's a senator for don't remember right now. So he's asking some tough questions in this document about accounting, and it's being answered by Orszag. And copied on this correspondence is counsel to the president, Gregory B. Craig. Have you heard of this gentleman?
No.
Well, let me tell you.
He's the Obama's lawyer.
Yes. He is Obama's lawyer. I'm reading from Wikipedia, which, of course, is highly unreliable, but usually a good starting point. Past clients. Craig has represented numerous high-profile clients. In 1981, he represented John Hinckley Jr., who tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan. He represented Senator Ted Kennedy during the 1991 rape trial of William Kennedy Smith. He represented the Cuban father of Elian Gonzalez during the 2000 child custody dispute with U.S. Marshals. You all remember that one. Craig represented United Nations Secretary General Kofi Annan during the Volcker Commission's investigation into the scandals involving the Oil for Food program.
This is unbelievable.
This guy, he represents hoods.
The wrong side of hoods.
The hoods, man. But of course, he was personal. He also represented Bill Clinton during the Monica Lewinsky trials. It's just unbelievable. And this is the president's lawyer, counsel to the president.
Why would he pick this? Well, obviously.
Well, because
hello.
Hey, Ted Kennedy not in jail. Kofi Annan still at the UN. I mean, that was Kofi Annan. Didn't his son steal millions of dollars?
Oh, it was a complete fiasco. It was just corrupt. It was just the worst thing ever.
Oh, Craig earlier represented the Panamanian government during the trial of Manuel Noriega. Just goes on and on and on.
Wow.
It just goes on. So, I'm just like, wow, that's unreal.
You'd think just for image sake alone, you wouldn't have that guy.
Well, it's under the radar.
I guess except for our, thousands of.
Let me see if it even says it in his wiki entry. Washington-based lawyer. Yeah, current White House counsel to President Barack Obama. Says it right at the top. And John Hinckley Jr., of course, was acquitted of the assassination on Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, but wasn't he locked up?
He's also been a foreign policy advisor to Edward Kennedy and Madeleine Albright when she was Secretary of State. It's just...
Yeah, it's a good laundry list. Well, Obama's not going to get himself in any legal trouble.
No, not with those guys on his team. Something I did realize, which I just caught a Twitter about. Someone was bitching. You know, now that I'm using TweetDeck, I'll just put in Gordon Brown, Obama, and it's great because you really see what a small segment of the universe, admittedly. But now we've got celebrities coming onto this thing. You got to figure that, you know, lots of people are going to come in, and it's kind of like blogging. I can see it. It's blogging on your cell phone. I mean, that's not the way I use it, but I can see why people would gravitate toward that. And so you get a lot of interesting comments, you know, not just from your Twitter sphere. And a good post in Boston.com. There's a lot of criticism that in the $787 billion stimulus bill, there is not a single dollar for Katrina victims. Not a single dollar, which would seem like an obvious place to put some money into.
Hmm. Yeah, it is interesting.
And
you're really doing a lot of work on this show, by the way.
Well, yeah, I am. Thank you. Yes, but it's important.
Maybe you should back off a little, if you know what I'm saying.
Why? What are you talking about? What are you talking about, Dvorak?
I'm just saying. If you know what's good for you.
No. Well, remember we talked about...
I think as part of our formula...
Yes.
Which really doesn't have an agenda except for bringing out. I guess we do have an agenda to expose, corruption or corruption or just bad government. Essentially,
it's to lift the veil of the matrix, John.
So I think one of our formula, what's evolving in the evolving formula, is this highlighting one new guy.
one guy per show, one guy to go look at.
Yeah, one guy you'll look at, because I'm sure this is, look, they have enough people in that office now, I'm sure, that we could do one guy, you know, twice a week, we can do a different guy, and then we always do callbacks to the various guys, because yeah. I think it's going to be a gold mine. This is like gold.
It's total gold, everybody.
We need a little hit on that. We need a gold.
We need a gold jingle.
A gold hit, yeah. Gold.
Well, it's got to have a name. It's got to be like an item name, you know? It's going to be like...
Yeah, yeah.
Bad guy of the day. In the morning. Something like that?
Yeah, something like that. But, you know, it's a sting. It's a sting.
A stinger. Okay. It's an acapella sting. Bad guy of the day. Okay. So on Thursday, when we were actually doing this show... is when, I think currently it's still the number one video on YouTube, when on CNBC, Rick Santelli just started yelling and screaming, which was fantastic, of course, to see. I'm a guy who loves making television, and boy, that was some good-ass television. And this Santelli, he's running with it. He is so smart. He's like on every talk show. And he's like, oh, I apologize. I shouldn't have said losers, but I'm really angry. And, you know, very much I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it any longer type of vibe.
Yeah. Did you read my Market Watch column on this?
No, I'm sorry. What I didn't. What did it say?
I attacked the whole. Well, it wasn't about this, but it was in there. I attacked the Santelli for this particular outburst. And my rationale is pretty straightforward.
Go for it.
We have, over the last 12 or 15 years, both through the end of the Reagan administration, definitely throughout Clinton's administration, Clinton pulled the plug on, you know, all these laws that were put in place after the Depression, which have resulted in essentially, banks being able to do what they did and then, of course, go broke. I have most of these things on a list I'll put up. But the consumer protection laws have all been gutted. They have ridiculous interest rates. You have these places that, you know, take your paycheck, payday or pay cash, you know, whatever, paying it, get your money in advance places.
Your tax refund?
There's these places all over the country where you can take your pay stub in, because your paycheck's coming in 2 days, but you want some money now. You can go and they'll give you the money in advance, and
Days
later you have to pay them back. But if you don't pay them back, you have to pay 10%, 20% interest. It's essentially
a scam.
Loan
shark. Yeah, loan sharking.
But it's legal because they've changed all the laws and there's no consumer protection anymore. And the fact of the matter is that the consumer protection, there's public utilities commissions don't exist anymore. So the phone companies that were all busted up, well, we don't need them anymore. And then they all reform like that, that liquid guy on the Terminator 2 or Terminator 3. They just form back as AT&T again. What happened there? How did that happen? So now you can get a phone bill with a bunch of weird charges and you can't do anything about it. Because there's nobody that you can bitch to. You can't say to the PUC that you're getting ripped off, and you can't say to the phone company that I'm not paying it, because then they'll cut you off. You have no place to go. Well, don't worry about it. So, because the free market is what the absolutists say. The free market will take care of it. The free market doesn't take care of stuff for individuals. You know, if you're like one person fighting AT&T, the free market doesn't do you any good. You do need these protective bodies. And you need consumer protection laws, which are all gone. So the consumer protection laws are gone, and these poor saps, these people who got in and over their head on these mortgages, these people who were sold the bill of goods by salesmen, that then there was no protection for them. May have expected there'd be some protection, but no. They were walked down the primrose path. They're not like Santori, right? They're not like
Santelli.
Santelli. They're not like Santelli. They're not like those guys on the trading floor cheering. They're not professional investors. They're the public. There's some people out there. They don't know anything like that they're going to get ripped off, or they're going to be put in a bind, or they're going to get screwed over by the system. So why are you jumping on them? Why is it their fault all of a sudden? Why should they be condemned and essentially called idiots when the entire system doesn't support the public anymore? This is just an attack on the middle class. I think that scene on CNBC was abhorrent. I think it was disgusting. I think he should have apologized profusely. And the fact that he's taken advantage of the situation, he's going to have a meeting with Obama, is unbelievable to me. It's sick.
Let's have a quick listen to Press Secretary Robert Gibbs, the same briefing on Friday, where he addresses Santelli specifically, which I found highly unusual.
The House. It won't bail out.
Hold on, let me find it.
And it is not going to help a person's home from being foreclosed. The money that's invested with a mortgage payment, here, one that's been foreclosed.
Shit.
Reading.
Well, you're cussing a lot over the
studying on the
issues. I'm pissed off because I had it queued up.
To read the president's plan.
Yeah.
And understand that it will help.
Back up a little bit. Here we go.
I would encourage him to read the president's plan. And understand that it will help millions of people, many of whom he knows. I'd be more than happy to have him come here and read it. I'd be happy to buy him a cup of coffee. Decaf. Chuck.
I want to sort of follow up on the criticism. So,
what's even crazier, John, is now that he's responding to that.
This is another distraction.
It's a total distraction. Let me, I thought I had it, up. Well, he was on Kudlow's show, and he's like, "Yeah, of course I'm going to go to the White House." And I there's a lot to your rant there, John. I must confess, there's a lot to your rant. It's if anything, it's well, even the fact that the press secretary is responding to it, you know, and saying, "Oh, he should go to his computer, look at it, print it out," that almost reeks of a setup, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
A distraction setup? Of course, GE is a subsidiary, or CNBC is a subsidiary of NBC, which is owned by General Electric, and the CEO of General Electric is on the president's economic advisory board. So that's
exactly.
That's three hops, you know. That's better than the Kevin Bacon game.
Right.
Hey, maybe we should change it to the Obama game. If you can be connected to Obama,
I like it.
Within six separations from Obama. Not bad, huh? Yeah, we could do that.
Mm.
I bet you anybody is. It's, I tell you, it's show business for ugly people, and now they're getting beautiful. Damn.
Anyway.
Yeah, so well, that's a good rant.
But my column in Market Watch discusses this. It's running right now.
So the distraction, of course, what it's distracting from is a number of things, including, right after the stimulus package, 17,000 more troops going to Afghanistan. Pakistan is out of control, dude.
This is, oh yeah, Pakistan is a nightmare.
I mean, it's
this was a foregone conclusion years ago. I mean, I think everybody knew this was coming.
Because who's running the place now that Musharraf is out? Is anyone running the place? Or just the Taliban?
No, the Taliban's only got that one area.
No, I thought they were now in the north. Like, they have this whole enclave.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, they gave them it. They gave them the area.
Pakistan gave it to them.
Yeah. Basically gave. Well, you know, the Taliban came from Pakistan to begin with. You know, the Pakistanis, you know, they switched. There was a really good. I have this really good article about the history of this. You know, the Pakistanis went into the Wahhabi camp of extreme fundamentalist Muslimism or Islam.
Yeah.
Islam. And I think, and I don't have the exact date, but I think it was in the 70s or some or later. And not sure. But anyway, there's a real good paper that documents this history. And it's really part of the real worldwide problem. And nobody's done anything to reverse essentially change in philosophy of the poorest of the Muslims in Pakistan. But obviously,
I'm floundering.
But if I had this page, because one of those things, you know, there's something sometimes you run into. You find a document that's like outlines a history of some sort, and it's so dense, and obviously hits everything. It hits all the right buttons, and you can't express it. Unfortunately, best thing you can do is just pass on the document to somebody else, and I have to go back and get that document. I think I sent it to you, as a matter of fact.
You might have. I have here from the Times on Saturday, President Obama's administration has broadened the number of radical groups targeted by the CIA inside Pakistan. So I guess we're in now, and we're doing covert operations.
Yeah, I guess.
And also, there was an admission. Oh, I should. I hope I'm going to find that. Admission by the Israeli government that they've been in Iran targeting nuclear scientists and nuclear laboratories and blowing
the
stuff
Mossad.
Up. The Mossad, yeah.
Yeah.
But it was like an AP
story.
Yeah,
I read
story.
That too.
Yeah, I was amazed. I mean, so that shit's going on? I mean, you really think that's happening?
I think it's just disinformation, personally.
Really?
I mean, all you have to do is go in there and do something weird and then put the word out that this is going on, figuring it out, because they don't, you know, the problem with Iran, I think everybody over there knows it, especially the scientists, is that they don't, you know, that the media is not, I guess you could call it corrupt, because the government won't let you print anything that's not approved. And so you can't trust the media to give you accurate information. So rumors, this, by the way, is going to happen in this country. So you can
gonna happen.
Well, I mean, to more of an extreme. And so I think you can actually move opinion with rumors and innuendo a lot easier in an environment where the media is basically no good. And it is happening here to some extent. But there, it must be just a piece of cake, because no one's going to believe anything they read in the newspaper. So if the word starts passing around that the Israeli Mossad's killing scientists in Iran, murdering them, and then since there's no real good communications there, you can't, you know, really read
can't
anything.
Double check it. Yeah.
Can't double check it. So you can get real freaked out. So I think it's pretty, you know, pretty interesting that they try to pull that. I just don't see it happening. I mean, maybe, I don't know. I mean, it would be something that it's not unknown to the Israeli intelligence to do this stuff. They shot that. Remember that guy they killed who built that big cannon?
Oh, yeah, the 100-foot-long cannon. You mean that one?
That guy. Well, I mean, he was the most famous cannon designer in the world. He was very, you know, used by as a consultant. He was going to apparently build this, you know, 100-foot-long cannon. It's huge. Cannon that they was going to put in Iraq, and they were going to build a shell Tel Aviv, because this, you know, you could shoot a shell. This guy was like apparently just very I can't remember his name. Bull, I think, was his name or something like that. He was just like minutes away from being able to, and he believed you could do it, designing a cannon that could put a satellite in orbit.
Yeah, it sounds feasible, I guess.
If the cannon was long enough.
Yeah,
And he's most modern cannons today are of his design for a lot of different reasons. I mean, he was a genius, many on a cannon nut. So this Mossad, and I don't think nobody's ever denied it, was Israeli intelligence. They got sick of this guy, you know, building this thing, and they tried to stop him, I guess, and he told them to shove it, and so they just shot him in the hall in some of his hotel somewhere.
Goodbye.
And that was the end of it. Bye.
Bye. You're not a problem anymore.
You know, so it's not beyond the possibility.
Well,
but
yeah.
I think if the guy had backed off, he wouldn't have been killed.
So possibly. But I agree with you. I'll just take it a step further. I think our media is already completely infiltrated. And it's, and again, it's not like people are being forced to write something, but it's a culture. It's a culture of these companies, and stuff gets passed down, and they at the 40th floor said they want this to happen. It just kind of happens. And disinformation gets out all over the place.
Let me just add to that. There's a couple other things that probably should be mentioned if we're going to talk about this kind of thing. Generally speaking, if you're working for a media company like General Electric, NBC, or you know any of these other, or Disney, ABC, or any of these other large corporations that happen to have you know ownership of the outlets, you probably don't do one of two things. One, if you're working for ABC, you're not going to do an expose on the dangers of one of the rides at Disney World Orlando.
Probably not.
Ain't going to happen.
No.
And you're probably not going to go after General Electric if you know that there's a stride that exists that's dangerous, because if you go after General Electric in an attack piece saying, well, their jet engines are...
You're probably going to lose your job.
You're going to... But I'm saying at ABC, you're not going to go after the NBC story or the General Electric story, because you know that they're going to go after that bad ride because it's a quid pro quo in the media.
Exactly.
I mean, writers very rarely attack each other, and I've done it. And I always know, and people that attack me always know the same thing, which is you're going to get attacked back.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's a balancing thing. So somebody says, you know, something, you know, and then you do, you know, you wait and you lie in wait. Usually you don't do it right away, and then you just do it. And then you, and as a writer, you're always waiting. This happened to me because I had, they tried to do a hit piece on me in Wired some years ago. And I thought,
wait a minute, a hit piece on John C. Dvorak?
And when I actually Paulina Borsuk wrote it, and they had to profile me. They're going to do a big profile. So I always was waiting for a hit piece because I had written this extremely scathing article about how I thought Nicholas Negroponte was a big phony.
cool.
It was in an obscure publication, but I figured one of these days, you know, something was going to crop up. And also, I seem to have offended one of the publishers of Wired at some point, one of the original ones. So she comes out, and, you know, she's got it. You know, to be honest about it, and anybody out there who's tried to do this, in fact, I was almost profiled in Playboy, not a hit piece, but a regular profile. But to be honest about it, it turns out, and you know this as well as anyone, I'm actually a fairly dull person. Don't have a lot of shit going on.
I was just gonna say, why would they even bother with a profile on John?
Point.
It's like,
that's,
you know, he's a dusty old writer dude. I mean, who likes food and wine? Nothing. I mean, what do you want?
There's nothing going on, and so
that's funny.
So anyway, so I have. So they did the best they could, but I asked her out point blank, and you know, I did my due diligence on her because I never met her before, and I see her once in a while, say hi, but you know, you always do your due diligence on the writer. So I did as much research as I could, and I found out she was like a vegetarian or a vegan or something like that. So I insisted that we go to dinner and have one of our meetings over dinner at Greens, which is this spectacular vegetarian restaurant in San Francisco, which has just a terrific food in it. You know, that tends to, you know, I always like to put people into a environment where their food is distracting them from dealing with me. and usually I do it with press people because I don't really want to listen to their pitches about their, you know, company. I'd rather, you know, have a good meal. And so she told me, she said, yeah, it was designed to be a hit piece. She told me. I mean, she just told me.
Interesting.
And so you know, they did what they could. They got one person to say something bad about me, and they put that in there. So, you know, some PR woman said I was a jerk, but that was about it. And then somebody else defended me, which, of course, the person who defended me got quoted. And, gee, guess who gets a little extra credit nowadays? I'm thinking, like, I'm looking at this as there's a PR woman. One of them says I'm a jerk, and of course they leave her name out. And the other one says I'm a really okay guy. Which of these? Which one is really the PR woman here?
Yeah.
You know, obviously the smart one. You know, whether I'm a good guy or not, she has to now. I have to always go. Yeah, so I have to take her call.
Oh.
And the other one is obviously a moron. Yeah. And I've run into. In fact, I ran into one PR woman once. I was because I do a lot of online research and. So I run into this woman slamming me on some website about something. I don't know why. And I looked into it. She's a PR woman. And she works for two or three companies.
Yeah, smart. That's a good one.
I looked at this.
Let me write about that product. Idiot.
What an idiot.
Well, so here's who owns Bloomberg now, John? Is that did Murdoch buy that as well?
I don't know. I didn't know that.
I thought Bloomberg got sold. I thought it got sold. Maybe I'm confused.
I don't know.
Well, they came. Well, so I'm hoping we can still believe what they write. But this is very au courant, and it caught my eye. Apparently, there's been mismeasurements of the Arctic sea ice due to faulty sensors. And the extent of the Arctic sea ice, which of course has been claimed to have been reducing severely. Well, it seems like they were off by 500,000 square kilometers because
well,
of faulty sensors. So is it melting or not?
Well, yeah, no, it's definitely melting. I mean, we're all in a globe. This is the global warming era.
Yeah, we're all going to die.
Just ignore that data. Ignore any contradictory data.
Oh, man. You're crapping out.
No.
Tell me to stop downloading porn.
Nobody's up. So Bloomberg is a public company, it looks like. Is that right?
I think it's public, yeah.
Yeah, Bloomberg himself is going to buy it back.
Yeah, it would make sense.
Okay.
It's kind of fun to see that Obama, you know, we had the governors over at the White House.
Yeah.
Guess what the entertainment was for the dinner?
John Legend.
Well, no, it's so incredibly unhip. Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Oh my God, you're kidding!
Yeah. I don't think Philip Bailey, who was the original lead singer, I don't even think he's even with the group anymore. That's like getting the four tops, where you get one top, you get three other guys, or a pip. You know, high with the pips. Earth, Wind, and Fire. That's not the epitome of cool.
No, not at all. I wonder who booked that act.
No, probably the same person who publicized it, which was probably the one that was calling you out. Stupid idiots. So big news today is that, and I'm not sure how the numbers work, but, the president says that he is going, within 4 years, he will bring the national deficit down by half to a little over $500 billion. And I'm thinking...
No, but the national deficit is not a trillion. It's more than that, isn't it?
No. Well, of course, that's a whole trick. That's the annual national deficit. The annual national deficit was like a trillion. Of course, now it's, you know... I don't know. What did we spend last year? Like easy a trillion just on bailout stuff. The total numbers is into the tens of trillions. But, you know, now it just seems like, what? You know, and he's going to have a plan on Tuesday. I don't understand. Doesn't that mean you have to either raise taxes and cut government spending in order to do that?
You have to do something.
Yeah.
So well, he's going to tell us on Tuesday. We can talk about it on Thursday. You know, the problem is everybody in the Stye Horowitz talks about this, and he has some charts. I just need to repost them on my blog. Every time one of these boneheads goes up and gives a speech like this, the market tanks the next day.
Oh, incredible.
Well, he says they should just shut up.
Well, that Dodd, could you? I mean, Dodd's head has got to get handed to him because, of course, the whole, and by the way, I did call it only 6 days late. The market went below my number of 72.86. Below. Gold almost hit its all-time high of 1,003. I do want to say I called this in November, maybe even October, but certainly in November. And this is not a nana-nana event, but it's very important because then, you know, there's like some extra credibility that comes along. I'm saying, hey, you know, all right, he was right about that. So then I can be a little more crackpotty about some of the other stuff.
Good.
Yeah. But it was Senator, is it Senator?
I think as long as it doesn't, yeah, Senator.
Senator,
as long as it doesn't go to 6,000, I'll be okay.
It's going to go to 6,000, and you know, S&P 600. Watch for that. That's the real hard one that's going to hit. S&P 600 market. I don't have a date for you, but yeah, I totally believe S&P 600. So
they're already freaked out that it's under 800. You know that?
Yeah. Oh, no, I totally. Let me just find this. So the market tanked. After, and this was what was interesting, after Christopher Dodd, who is also in charge of the Senate Banking Committee, I believe, he comes out and he says, well, we might have to nationalize the banks. You know, it could just be a brief period of time, but we might have to nationalize the banks. And so that's on Bloomberg. Bloomberg then starts spinning it as, we've got this exclusive, and they play the soundbite, and the market goes, the bottom just fell out momentarily. And yeah, and then you know, and then they rush back and.
These guys are clueless about this. Why don't they just
shut up? They must be clueless. They must be clueless. I mean,
nobody wants to hear from them. Shut up and get to work.
Yeah.
I don't know. So we want to talk about. We still need, you know, another 900 subscribers to the podcast. I'm going to keep doing this every week until we get to it. Actually, at some point, when we get to a certain number, we're going to do three a week.
Of course, we are. My goal is eventually we'll be doing this. You're right. Yeah, we'll be careful. But you're right. When we get to the right number, we'll have to go to three. And also because there's just too much to cover. There's too much to talk about.
Right. There is. I mean, we could go on, especially if you're now that you've decided to actually do research.
Well,
it's
killing the show, man. Hey, listen, would it kill you to do a little bit of research? To do something here?
The way the show is, the people who have just started listening. So hold on a second. Let me get this thing back on my ear. The people who just started listening should realize that when we started doing this show, it was a casual conversation between two guys, and we had a lot of stuff to catch up on. And yeah. It was once a week.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, we'd chat about this. And then we'd realize that we knew about something. We'd get on a jag. You know, it would be very interesting, but the show would roam aimlessly. And it would be mostly, though, about international stuff. And actually, we need to get back to doing a little more of that.
I'm ready.
Instead of just,
I'm ready.
But anyway, it was that we managed to get through an hour and a half a week of just chatting. And it was interesting because it was an ebb and flow to the show. And then we went to the twice, and then you started taking it more seriously. So, and I started taking in the crystals list, but at least I'm trying. And and so the show is now getting more packed with more information. But I'm not going to complain about it because of the stuff that you're digging up about, especially about these, which I realize that you've stumbled onto an interesting idea, which is just pick anybody out of this Obama group
and Twitter
and look at them and see what the heck they're doing, what they're up to, and you've got a good 10 minutes of material. So, but the point is that people out there need to subscribe. And this is a voluntary thing. We're not, it's like shareware. Subscribe to the show to go to Dvorak.org/NA. I'll have the.
That's donate. That's donate.
Donate.
That's the Curry Dvorak Library Project. Dvorak.org/ Dvorak.org/NA.
Dvorak.org/NA and donate $2 a month to listen to us. And that won't change, even though we may increase the frequency. I'll have the buttons up later before the Thursday show for a once a year donation and an open donation if somebody wants to throw a bunch of money at us. When I think of that, I'm thinking of Dubai. I think Dubai. Somebody in Dubai should
throw some real dollars at us. Yeah, exactly. Someone who's hurting in Dubai. Oh, I spoke to my buddy, by the way. And he suggested there's a periodical which is, believe it or not, Petroleum Journal Monthly,
mm-hmm.
And he suggests subscribing to that. It's a physical magazine. And he confirmed, he said, the actual cost for the Saudis is $30 per barrel of oil, and they've invested at over $100 barrel in oil in their infrastructure and their pleasure playground. And he confirmed the thousands of cars at Dubai Airport. And of course, what's happening now is everyone's pulling out. All the companies are moving down to South America. There's, of course, the whole East Timor, Indonesia thing, you know, that's been going on for thousands, for 100 years. You know, there's oil everywhere, and they're just moving out. They're just saying goodbye. The Arabs are just being completely obliterated. Obliterated, I tell you.
I got to get some documentation for this assertion.
He was going to give me the issue where that was laid out pretty clearly. And, you know, he says, look, I got to lay off people because it's a contractor business. And what's happening is, because he works at a oil services company, and you know, so basically setting up the infrastructure in subcontracted through the big oil companies, and you know, so they'll give them a price on something, and you know, instead of bickering over the price, what the oil companies are doing is saying, yeah, that's great, that's an interesting price, we'll call you again in 6 months. So everything's being pushed off. Basically, nothing. You know, they're stagnating. There's no investment. Nothing going on because everyone's waiting for the price to go up. It's just.
I wonder what they're going to do with those. You know, they got all these buildings that they've thrown up in Dubai. I mean, it's like it's almost like a ghost town.
It's a ghost town. No, no, everyone's
we got to go. We got to find some way to go now. Seriously,
we don't got to go. No, I disagree. There's no reason to go to Dubai. I've been. There's no reason to
I've
go.
Been to, but I haven't been. They've been putting up all these buildings.
Crap, man. You crap.
The world's
out.
Tallest building.
Don't talk so loud. Maybe it's when you talk loud that it happens. Back off a bit.
Oh, well. Okay.
All right.
So is that better? Do I sound better? Do I sound a little more DJ? I sound a little more FM radio. So Emirates Airlines. Yes. Let me know where I'm coming in clear. Emirates.
Yes, we got you.
Emirates now has a direct flight to San Francisco on a long-haul 777 to Dubai. Mm. So I figure we should probably find some way to get a comp flight round trip.
No, you know what, John? No. Why don't you go get that comp flight, all right? Why don't you go sit in Dubai on Thursday and then give me a call? Because it's boring in Dubai. It's freaking boring. It's boring.
Okay,
it's boring. I was there for a week. I wanted to shoot myself after 3 days.
Well, it could be more interesting. I mean, there's a lot of shopping.
There's no hookers. There's no booze. It's boring.
Well, I'm not sure there's no hookers anymore, but you're probably right. But so I priced the flights just to see what the, you know, thinking, well, I'm just looking at the price of the flights.
All right. Let me go through some real important news here. You and your Dubai.
Let me tell you what the price is.
I don't want to go to Dubai. I don't care. I want to sit in the command center all day. Preparing for the show.
$10,000. It seems a little high.
What's $10,000?
The flight to Dubai.
$10,000? What, was that first class?
No, it's business.
Jeez. That's outrageous.
I think they're just living in a dream world.
You think? All right, I'm going to run through this, John. Stop me when you want to. Gordon Brown visiting Washington on March 3rd. That will be underreported in the United States, so keep an eye on it. See if anything interesting shows up, because, of course, Gordon Brown is now on his trip, New World Order trip, head trip. He's at the G20. Here we go. In Berlin, Gordon Brown appeared upbeat about the success of the conference of European leaders. And here's a quote from him. "We will have a global system where we can identify and have transparency and disclosure from all financial institutions, including, of course, hedge funds." So that's the World Bank that he's announcing there, essentially. This is, this will please you. This came and went real quick, so it'll never hit the headlines. The Army Times, which I do read.
Good, man. It's an excellent publication.
It's a great publication. Had announced that the National Guard was going to do what do they call it? The gun
deployment.
Well, they were going to do deployment. Yes, in a town in Iowa, Arcadia, Iowa, population 443. The Guard had planned a 4-day urban military operation of sending troops to take over the town and search door to door for suspected weapons dealers. And so this got a lot of quick online press, and now they've scrapped it.
Wow. Well, that doesn't mean it's really scrapped.
Well, this is the thing. They've underestimated the internet. They thought that they could fool us with the old wag the dog television tactics, but it's just not working anymore. You know, people are so jaded. And of course, there's a lot of people actually bringing us news online. It's like, oh, I've been tracing back the origins of Sir Stanford, of how that got broken. Apparently, it was a Venezuelan trader who started. I think he wrote a blog post about it. This is how pathetic our SEC is. He wrote a blog post. Well, yeah, exactly. Well, that's a beautiful thing. You know, he said, "Hey, man, this shit is off," and that's apparently how it started to spin out. But I sent you that thing, which it's even too freaky, I think, for us to talk about, just because it's so deep and detailed, and there's a lot of anti-Semitic overtures in it, which I really don't like, and I don't know how to get around it.
Yeah, you know that's the thing that you can do. I mean, typically these people that, it's always amazing to me where you have a person that seems to be outlining a very interesting situation, then they fall off the boat, kind of like their brain can't maintain that, the normal part of it, and then they go crazy with this. You know, people think that we're kind of, you know, bring out some of this conspiratorial stuff to some extent, you mainly. Yeah, but it's nothing like the stuff that we don't talk about. Holy crap, these guys are completely insane.
Yeah. Well, this is the Who's Behind Madoff thing. Did you actually have a chance to read that?
Yeah, I read that. It's ridiculous. You know, it's Israeli intelligence and this and that and the other thing, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Well, I'm going to put the link in the show notes so that you know, someone out there might trigger something and they might think about something else, because it is really just connecting the dots. You know, that's all that we're doing.
Right.
UK loses highly sensitive Iraq war papers. There's another.
How do these people are losing stuff constantly?
British Ministry of Defense documents on the Iraq war have been reportedly stolen from a lawyer for a private law firm on a train to London. These guys, you know what it happens is they get on the train, even though Boris Johnson outlawed it, they get on the train and they start drinking. And, you know, you're on the train for at least half an hour, and then maybe an hour and a half. Some people going down south to the southern counties. And they're drunk. They're hammered. They're tired. The train is kind of wobbly. You know, you're drinking a brewski. And like,
right.
And then you leave it with your paper or whatever. You know, you just leave it on the train. That's what,
yeah, you lose it. And yeah. But then you blame it on it being stolen.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't. What else are you going to say? Okay, let's take a look. I'm a bureaucrat. I brought my shit on the train because I'm stupid. And it's not encrypted because I don't really know how to do that. I'm too busy getting sloshed. And so I get on the train. I go right to the bar. It's the first thing I do. And then I start drinking. And, you know, now have another one. And, you know, have another one. You know, it's always going to be like scotch or something, too. Not Chardonnay, that's for sure. And it's a long way, and you don't want to deal with your – and you get wasted. I was on a plane once with a guy who was a publisher of let's just say, a magazine that I used to work for. It was actually a PC World publisher. And this guy was so – he got – and I was accidentally sat, or just by coincidence, sat next to him. And he was a guy, and this is years ago, so nobody can figure out who it is, but he got hammered on the plane from New York to San Francisco. I mean, I'm talking about hammered.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons for that is because the plane was delayed, and this is during the era where if your plane was delayed by any amount of time, they would offer you, they'd open the bar up. And I don't think I was in business. I might have been. Whatever the case was, the bar was open one way or the other. And so this guy kept having two vodkas over ice, two vodkas. I'll take two more vodkas.
Yeah, over ice.
And he couldn't drink very well, it seemed to me. But he had about maybe, I'd say, 14 of those little bottles of vodka. And so he was like really shot. And then he, I was concerned about it, so I, you know, stayed with him. And by the way,
you're like the girlfriend that holds your hair back as you're puking. That's your essential role.
So I'm like hanging, making sure this guy doesn't, you know, get mugged or something. So I, you know, he wanted to go to his car, and he's like, he comes off the plane. I'm gonna drive home. And I said, I don't know if you should. And he's fumbling around for his keys. And he, you know, it's like the video, you know, he drops his keys and then falls down trying to pick them up.
Ugh.
And so I said, hey, you know, I think I'll drop you off. You know, maybe you can come back and get the car later. Oh, yeah. So he says yes. And so I hopefully he doesn't throw up in my car. He doesn't. And I dropped him off. And it's like, you know, he has some place in the city. And I walked him up to his door where I think he basically fell asleep on the stoop. And I left. I figured I did my job. I got him close enough. And then he was fired some months later because apparently he was a drunk. So I can imagine guys, you know, in this horrible government job, and they just leave the computer behind because they walk off and leave it on the train and boop, there it goes.
Yeah.
And they never see it again because somebody will pick it up and, you know, use it as their computer. They probably don't ever go to the data files, and if they did, they wouldn't know what to do with them.
Well,
it was stolen.
It is interesting because the UK has been pretty good at, and this is a big flap over here, and I'm sure you're not hearing about it at all in the US, essentially, the British Justice Department kept all these secrets about essentially the Bush White House, saying, okay, you know, we're going to be moving people around for secret interrogations in jails all over the place. You're going to cooperate and shut up. And then there's the case of this one British man who was in Gitmo for 4 or 5 years, tortured. And, you know, so now it's all kind of coming out that MI6, I guess, or maybe even Ministry of Defense, that they knew about this and they actually participated in torture. And there's pictures of the guy's fingernails are torn out. And, you know, this is the so-called special relationship that America and Britain have together. It's just disgusting. It's vile.
Special relationship.
Listen to it. They'll keep saying that. Special relationship. Here's a funny one. Police officers were rushed to a hospital in the United Kingdom after a suspicious substance was thrown through a car window. So the Metropolitan Police responded to these reports of an unusual smell coming from a car with smashed windows in Enfield, North London. They saw an unknown brown substance inside, and those who came into contact with it were rushed to the hospital. It turns out it was HP sauce, the brown sauce. I just love. Oh, it's brown stuff. We're gonna die. It's gonna explode. It's the brown stuff. And it was that horrible brown sauce.
Yeah, HP. That's the A1 sauce of England.
Yeah, only don't be confused. It ain't no A1.
You know. Well, I'll tell you the sauces that. By the way, I did a thing once where I went. I was traveling enough around the world that I would buy HP sauce, A1 sauce, and Worcestershire sauce in different parts of the world. And it's amazing how different the formulations are from place to place. It's not even – you think as well it's the same, right? No. Right.
No.
Alien. And the one that – if anyone wants to try this – and get some real interesting products. I don't recommend the HP and A1 experiment anymore because for one thing you can't use either one of those things. These things are almost all high fructose corn syrup because they won't use sugar.
Yeah, which is the stuff that'll kill you.
Except, you know, well, now you're going to get a letter. But except I think Canada's the only last holdout for using a lot of sugar stuff and, you know, cane sugar. But anyway, the Worcestershire sauce is the one that's the most extreme in its differences. It's very interesting. Lee and Perrin, the exact same brand.
It tastes
Lee
different, Perrin, yeah.
It tastes radically different from country to country.
You know what's an interesting sauce? There was a guy who was on Dragon's Den, which is kind of a reality show here in the United Kingdom. Is it on the States now, Dragon's Den? It must be on BBC America or something
America,
like that.
America. Yeah. I think I may have seen it.
Yeah. There's no U.S. version yet, I know, because they asked me for it, but the show never took off. It never got greenlit. And they had a guy on who was making this sauce in his kitchen at home, And this is a Rasta guy, right? And he walks in, he has a cool song like reggae, reggae sauce, and he's doing this whole Rasta thing. And they taste the sauce, and they're like, wow, this is good. You know, we're going to give you whatever he was asking for, 50,000 pounds or whatever, to get the business going. And now it's available and widely. And this shit is really good. It's fantastic.
What is it?
It's the reggae reggae sauce. It's kind of a a jerk chicken, yeah, like a jerk sauce in a way.
Yeah.
It has kind of a nice little stingy bite that lingers on. It's phenomenal. It's really, really good. So I will bring one over next time I come. You'll like the reggae reggae sauce. George Soros said on Friday, this is just to make you feel good, the world financial system has effectively disintegrated, adding that there is yet no prospect of a near-term resolution to the crisis. Soros said the turbulence is actually more severe than during the Great Depression, comparing the current situation to the demise of the Soviet Union. He said the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers in September marked a turning point in the functioning of the market. We witnessed the collapse of the financial system. So take that and stick it in your hat.
Well, hopefully he's wrong.
He's been pretty right about a lot of things. Of course, if you're actually in control of some of it, then it's easy to be right.
He also may be saying that because it might be a buying opportunity.
Hey, John, why don't you take that $80 that we've been donated so far to the Curry Dvorak Library and invest it wisely? You think we've hit the bottom, my friend? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, it seems to me one of the things you want to do is, if you have a lot of money and you're running hedge fund type operations, you want to keep, if the market is depressed, you know, or oversold, you'd want to push it down there as hard as you can, because if you move, you know, the problem with markets typically is if you have a lot of money, you move the market just by buying in, and which is not good, because you want to really, you know, you want to have something where it can soak it up like a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, this is what happens, and Horowitz and I were talking about this. This is what happens when people play paper trading. You know, they just want to practice. So
yeah,
I
heard this discussion. It was very funny about the pink slips where people are trading penny stocks. Yeah, of course. But that's the way it's all set up, is you practice, you practice, you trade. You're like, oh, man, I'm doing so great. I'm making $60,000, $70,000, $100,000. And then you do it for real money and you lose your shirt.
Yeah. the way it is.
It's the way it is. Yeah, we've all done it. We've all been there. We've all done the back trades. That's another one. Yeah, test your strategies with back trades so you can actually see how much money you would have made if you had implemented your strategy. That's my favorite.
Yeah, it's a classic. So anyway, so a guy like Soros, you know, to do anything, he has to have, you know, it has to be the sponge condition where it just can soak it up, and then once it's stabilized, then it starts going up. You know, that's where you make all your, you know, you make serious money. But, you know, so I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you can trust him. You know, that's the problem. I mean, I admired him. He's the one who brought in Greenberg to talk about the oil prices in front of Congress, which kicked off the collapse of the price of oil, because once the scam was realized, the next thing you know, which, by the way, people still say, well, that was shortage, you know, in their peak oil, you know, that all that bullshit was like revealed to be a fraud. And of course, people still don't know that. I don't know why the media doesn't get around to telling them, but, so, I mean, he's been in the game here and there, trying to do what he can. But, I don't believe this is true, what he says, because it just doesn't make – because it's not true. I mean, it's not – I mean, it's not in good shape, but it's not collapsed.
Well, I tend to agree with the distinguished gentleman, Mr. Soros.
I think he's playing a sucker's game.
Okay. I'm still predicting 600 S&P and 6,000 Dow.
Okay, predict what you want. This time I'm not agreeing with you like I did with the $200 oil and then have it thrown back in my face.
No, that's okay.
You know, just
that's
because
okay.
I casually said, yeah, I guess it could happen.
Okay. Berkshire Hathaway has, just as a data point there, has dropped almost 50% in the past year. This is the
world's greatest investor. Yeah.
The world's greatest investor. We talked briefly, and this is, I realized that, you know, I kind of glossed over this myself and how outraged you were about it when we spoke about it last. The idea that, the government was going to start taxing us by the mile using a black box with a GPS. And instead of gasoline tax, you would pay your taxes, of course, your carbon taxes, et cetera, per mile that you drove. And you really went off on it. You're like, oh, you know, that's never going to happen. It's crazy. It's outrageous. And I told you that this is being implemented in several countries. And I realized that, you know, living in the UK and having lived in the Netherlands, it was so easy for me to accept the idea that no matter how outrageous, I've already been conditioned. Because I remember hearing the story and I was like, you know, that's crazy, man. That's like such an invasion of privacy, et cetera, et cetera. But I really wasn't outraged because everyone over here is conditioned. I think we're 5 years ahead of the U.S. Everyone's just conditioned. Like, okay, yeah, they'll probably do that. They'll probably implement that. And they will. And it will happen in the United States, even though, of course, that story has been denied by Robert Gibbs once again. That was Ray LaHood's suggestion. And he did say it to the press. And so now it's been, you know, pulled off the table. But I think these are all just little trial balloons. They're going to do that. That's for real. And let me mention one more thing while I'm on the tracking shit. So I had installed Google Maps. Now I have, how's your battery doing on your E71? We got them, you got yours maybe 3 months after me?
Yeah.
Okay. How's the battery life doing?
Fine.
I mean, what's the 2 days?
Four.
4 days. So I've got this E71. I've had it longer than you have. I call very little on it since we moved to this house for two reasons. One, because it doesn't really have, T-Mobile doesn't have really great reception down in the basement where I am. So I have to put it near the window, and so you can't walk around. That kind of defeats the purpose. So, yeah, and I usually use Skype, and I have it rigged up through the system like I do now so I can have people on the speakers, and you know, I can play sound effects whenever I want to. It's much more fun. So I don't use it a lot.
Wait, you use sound effects in your regular normal phone calls?
Oh, man, on the conference calls? Are you kidding me? When we have the Mevio conference calls? Obama! We are
the people of America! Okay, all right.
I've got the E71.
That one is tedious.
Yeah, that's... I don't use that one.
Yeah.
Actually, I use this one.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
Yeah, well, that's a good one.
Yeah. So I had installed Google Maps with the latitude functionality when I went to see the Queen, right? A couple days before. And I had installed this, and I learned that it was pretty easy to quit the application, but it was actually still running because it does ask you. And oftentimes you'll be like, yes, you know, because you think it's saying, do you want to quit? Do you really want to quit? Because that's kind of the last message you get. But this message says, do you want to keep sharing your location? So I had been trapped by that once before. I didn't like that. And I'm like, I'm just going to uninstall this thing because it's bugging me that I actually flipped through that. And who knows? Ever since I've uninstalled it, my battery runs out very quickly. So I bought a new battery just to prove to myself.
Right, that is something going on.
And I believe that it is making connections. It's a possibility that it's making connections and doing something, because something has changed. Because the battery is literally running out overnight. It's next to my bed. It's always been full bars in the morning. And now I wake up and it's either almost empty or it's giving me a low battery warning. And it's a brand new battery that I put in just to prove that it, you know, that something was going on, that it's not the battery.
Well, how about this for an idea? I think you're probably right. And I'm reminded, as soon as you tell the story, of course, of like BitTorrents, you know, how these people get burned because they have a BitTorrent going. They don't know that they're doing file sharing, you know, because, you know, BitTorrent is like you download something, but you're uploading too, whether you know it or not. Or those old music sharing sites, you know, where you had, you know, you were basically always online. You didn't know it. You know,
yeah.
You were saying,
yeah, sure. Oh, yeah, sure. The system tray stuff, there's all kinds of, particularly on Windows, and you get almost any BitTorrent client, and you quit the client, but it keeps sharing.
Right. And the next thing you know, the feds are knocking on the door, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, hey, Curry, we hear you got some gold in there.
So,
God, son.
So, what you have to do, obviously, is you have to pull your little memory card out,
mm-hmm.
and just forget, put it in a like a one of those little holders. There's little micro SD cards. You can stick the little bitty card into a bigger card, and then you put it in your computer and just erase the damn thing. In other words, all your applications have got to go. I mean, make backups of your address book, and then probably do the same thing to your SIM card. And once the SIM card and that little card are erased, I'll bet you the problem goes away because it can't. There's nothing internal to the phone that I know of unless it's got some sort of. I can't think of anything.
And I'll tell you that I think there was one point during the day where I looked at my phone and I saw the 3G. You know, I saw that there was a network connection, and I went, "What the hell is that?" Because I'm switching around. And I had no apps open. I went to I had Google Maps was deinstalled by then, and I have no idea what was connecting.
Okay, I have one other possibility.
Hmm.
Your phone's been compromised, and it's basically on listening to you all the time, and it's relaying the information to someone.
That's possible.
That can happen.
Yeah. Okay.
I know what would defeat that immediately.
What's that?
If you turn the phone off.
Yeah. Yeah. Take the battery out. I think you have to take the battery out to be 100% sure.
Yeah, I guess if it was done right, you could turn the phone off, but it would still be listening.
Let me just. Hey guys, it's okay. I'm harmless. All right. I just talked to him. Okay,
it's true.
We got a couple more stories, John. Just maybe even stuff we'll talk about on Thursday. Eurojust, which is the EU's judicial cooperation agency, is taking the lead in finding ways to help police and prosecutors across Europe to wiretap Skype calls because they're apparently upset that they can't listen to us on Skype. And I just said, tune into the stream. It's a lot easier. High quality.
Right. And by the way, if you're listening, you're an intelligence agency, please, Dvorak.org/NA.
That's
we
right.
could use the...
The donations for the Curry Dvorak Library. because I have the album art for it, we've got to mention the wacky-ass blue Mustang at Denver International Airport as another piece in the puzzle of the...
Oh, yeah,
weird art. And of course, a part of this thing fell on its creator and killed him, just to make it an even better story.
Supposedly.
Supposedly. What do you think? It's like a Trojan horse, and the belly opens up and all kinds of things pop out?
Well, there could be something inside it that they didn't want anyone to know about, like a transmitter or some sort of a who knows what. And, fractal antennas designed for something specific. And this guy was going to mention that in the interview they were going to do with him after he finished the horse. And so they had to kill him.
we laugh, but we're not really that happy about it. And a piece for the just for fun, because, of course, tonight is the 81st Annual Academy Awards, which will probably get low ratings because, again, they
got all kinds of... There's a theme, for these awards. It's called the Year of the Dog.
Really? Because of Slumdog?
Yeah, that's a pun, right? Because of Slumdog, A, and B, it's also... It's ridiculous. These movies are boring.
Well, this is the point. Every single year, they do these really artsy-fartsy movies, which, by the way, some of them are really good, but they're not like the big blockbuster hits. The audience doesn't show up for the award show, people. It's like, I guess the numbers are down again. Well, of course, because it's boring. Anyway, so leaked out on the interwebs is the list of winners, if you care to hear who's going to win and would like to know.
Oh, okay,
if you want
for
a spoiler.
It.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. I thought that these things were sealed by Good Housekeeping or somebody.
Yes. the Martha Stewart Good Housekeeping.
Okay, we'll check. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to reveal the names, and then we're going to check to see if this is bullshit or not.
All right.
Okay, go.
Do you want to take a quick wager? Hi, baby. Thank you, darling.
Yeah, I'm going to wager that these... I'll make a $5 bet. That these are bogus.
Okay. All right. So let's just do the big ones. Actor in a leading role. Who do you think is going to win?
Who's nominated again?
Yeah, fuck if I know. They don't give you that. They just give you the names. I'll tell you who it is.
I know it's got to do with the wrestler, Jimmy Rourke.
Yes, Mickey Rourke. Mickey Rourke. Exactly. Okay. Then you'll also know actor in a supporting role, male.
I don't remember who.
Of course, Heath Ledger. Of course, he's got to get his
props. Heath Ledger. Yeah, right. Because he's dead.
Actress in a leading role. You know who that's going to be.
Who?
Kate Winslet.
Oh, yeah.
She's
right. They've already
winning
given
everything.
Her the war.
And then it gets a little more esoteric, so I'll just give you actress in a supporting role would be Amy Adams, who I do not know. Best Picture, Slumdog Millionaire. What other... here's one to...
How about Best Director? Give us Best Director.
Best Director... Hold on. Interesting.
This could go anywhere.
It says cinematography costs... well, that's interesting.
They don't have Best Director?
Yeah, I'm looking. How come I can't see it? Best Picture? Cinematography? Does that fall under cinematography?
No, directing.
Here it is. Danny Boyle for Slumdog Millionaire.
Okay.
How about this documentary feature? Okay, that's one that, if that's right, then you know the list was good.
No, it's not. No, because there's one guy that's so far out in front on that one. The one that does that did the documentary about Cambodia.
Oh, well, according to this, it's Man on a Wire.
Oh, okay.
Which is
might be interesting.
Isn't that the about the French guy that walked between the Twin Towers?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, so Man on a Wire. If that wins, then we'll know that this list was pretty good, if all the other ones are correct.
Well, we have the list. Post the list on the notes.
Yep.
And then people can make the comparison and see what didn't work.
So
because
noted.
It's, you know, I think a series of good guesses, you know, because there's been, you know, they've had enough award shows already, and they typically, you know, there's a percentage of these, you know, there's very rarely a surprise that, you know, you wouldn't have guessed. And this year it looks like it's kind of rigged, especially for the actors and actresses.
And then as we close down the show at 1 hour and 30 minutes, one final piece of news that just made me chuckle, coming in from the Netherlands. As you know, I've been harping for quite a while. I'm against the Gardasil HPV vaccination. I feel that it's not proven. There's children who have died from this. It's I believe it's the pharmaceutical industry just trying to make tons of money in cahoots with the government. And so they, you know, many nationalized or socialized healthcare systems are buying this from the big pharmaceuticals, and then they give it, you know, free to citizens of the country, which is, so the scam is already done, right? So they convinced the medical authorities this has to be in the package because we're going to save millions of girls from cervical cancer. And so the government then buys it. And this is a very expensive process. It consists of 3 vaccinations. You have to come back 3 times or come back twice after the initial one. I believe the total package is $400 or $500 per patient. So this is a big ticket item. And
wow.
You know, it's quite, you know, side note is it's killing people. Thank you, darling. So in the Netherlands now, because of course there is thank goodness there's a lot of people saying, hey, you know, this ain't such a certain, and I hope I can take some responsibility for that in the Netherlands specifically. This is not a sure deal, right? And so people are saying, well, I'm not so positive. So what did the health system come up with? Hey, if you come and you take your first shot and you come back for the other 2, we'll give you a free iPod.
Oh, that is sick.
How horrible is that? These are 13 to 16-year-old girls, and they're sending them letters with this offer.
Ah, it's sick.
Some people call me the crackpot.
Typical, you know, this is our example of consumer protection.
Some people call me the buzzkill. Yeah, of course. Exactly.
To wrap it back around.
Yeah, we totally need it. All right, well, so that's what's happening in the world.
All right, we'll be back on Thursday.
Yeah, and you're going to be back in...
I'll be back in the Bay Area.
In the Bay Area.
Northern Silicon Valley, otherwise known as Gitmo Nation North.
North. Something.
Or eat west or
North.
The Gitmo Nation.
Yeah, the Gitmo Nation. Hey, we had about double the normal audience on the streams today.
Well, I managed to Twitter it, and they, you know, with the right address, I think.
Oh, you don't think it's just because the show is gathering steam and we're just on fire right now? It's none of the. I totally forgot I was going to play my Obama song. You want me to save it?
Save it to Thursday. That's a teaser.
Well, it's not really an it's not a it's a it's a it's an old song.
Well, don't blow it for us. We had everybody all up, you know, on pins and needles.
It's a good one. Coming to you from Gitmo Nation East in Southwest London in the Crackpot Command Center. I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak here in the Pacific Northwest, also known as the Gitmo Nation Pacific Northwest. I'm John C. Dvorak, as I said.
We'll talk to you again on Thursday right here on No Agenda.